Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a broad look at global markets. We're going to be looking at some of the key events and market moving events of recent weeks. And we're also going to be looking forward to the key events for financial markets in the coming days and weeks. And to do that, we're very kindly joined once more by Fiona Sincotta, who is the Senior Market Analyst at City Index. Fiona, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. Pleasure to be here.
So, Fiona, before we get into it, it would be great if you could give a brief introduction to yourself as well as City Index for those people that may not be aware of the company, please.
Okay, so yes, I'm Senior Market Analyst at City Index. I've been there for many, many years. And City Index is a derivatives brokerage. It focuses on CFDs, so that's contracts for difference, and spread trading. So these are our ways to access the movements in the market and to make money or lose as well if things go against you from stocks, indices, foreign exchange, commodities, without actually owning the underlying asset.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we're going to be discussing some of those assets today. We're going to be looking at currencies. We're going to be looking at equity indices as well as the macro picture. But Fiona, I think it's going to be pertinent to start with the budget yesterday and what it meant for UK assets, if anything. Looking at the measures implemented by Jeremy Hunt yesterday, there weren't any surprises in there. Some people have called it dull. However, in the context of Liz Truss's doomed autumn statement a couple of years ago now, that is probably a good outcome for the government. So were there any major takeaways for UK assets from what we saw yesterday?
Yeah, so, you know, great introduction to the to the budget. You know, I think it was rather on the boring side, but as you said, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing right now. I mean, as far as sort of, you know, the headline takeaways from this, I think was the big announcement was the national insurance, the cut in national insurance tax by 2%. But that was pre-trialed and pre-released. So, you know, it wasn't a massive surprise. And also the other thing to bear in mind from that is, whilst we are seeing that cut to national insurance, we're also seeing a fiscal drag from the freezing of the income tax threshold. So it's a pretty much, and I think this is what we saw across the budget, is give with one hand, take from another, or take with another. So as a result, the actual market impact has been relatively muted to the budget. I think the other points that I just wanted to highlight that I thought were really interesting, the OBR sees inflation falling to 2% in April. So, you know, that is a massive piece of news. But interestingly, the Chancellor didn't mention anything about what was going to happen to inflation thereafter. So I think we can probably assume that it's expected to reaccelerate after falling in April. But on the positive side, we did see growth forecasts, which were upwardly revised. So that is some much needed good news for the UK, particularly if we think about, you know, that we tipped into a technical recession at the end of last year. So it's good to see that the OBR do consider that we will be growing again in 2024 and at a slightly faster pace than previously expected. Now, those sort of headlines have helped boost a little bit sterling. We've seen the pound has edged higher, particularly against the US dollar over the past sessions. Also, the other thing to bear in mind here, and we did get this news about the British ISA, and that has had an impact. We saw the FTSE 250 outperformed the FTSE 100. Obviously, the FTSE 100 is made up of more multinational stocks, although it does have some domestic stocks. It is also a majority of multinationals, whereas the FTSE 250 is much more domestically focused, and we did see that outperform just on expectations that there's going to be more money pouring into those companies. And I think the other thing that was quite clever about this British ISA is that it could create a deeper market, which could actually encourage more IPOs to take place in the UK. And we know recently, you know, that the UK has lost out to the US on several, you know, big IPOs, you know, Arm being the most obvious one to spring to mind, but it's not the only one, where companies have opted away from a London listing, rather going towards the US. Just sort of getting down into a more granular level, we've got the housing sector. I think there was some hopes that there might have been a 99% mortgage announced, and obviously that wasn't announced, but we did get some capital gains tax lowered on second homes. So that's a little bit of encouragement for the housing market. We haven't really seen a massive move in house builders at all on the back of that. Alcohol duty fixed, again, good news for pub chains, but that didn't see the pub sector didn't get the VAT cut that they were looking for. So again, you know, a little bit of good news, but then perhaps that's just weighed off with something which is not so encouraging. And as I said, as a result, I think, you know, the overall broad picture is that, you know, the markets haven't moved massively on this budget, just because there hasn't been too much that was surprising or really that sort of, you know, jolted the markets in any way.
Fantastic. And we're going to touch on sterling a little bit later on in this podcast and how that's behaving with the dollar. But as you said, there weren't any major upsets there, which is probably a big win for the UK government, given what's happened previously. So other major considerations this week for markets, it's not just this week, Fiona, it's something that we discussed on a previous podcast together. It's been a theme in markets now for around 18 months, and it's the Magnificent Seven technology shares, including the likes of Nvidia and Apple, of course, US listed. They've been major drivers of the S&P 500. If you strip out those particular companies, that index hasn't actually done particularly well, although it has been breaking to record highs on numerous occasions. But this week, Fiona, we did start to see some cracks. A couple of days ago, we saw quite a sharp sell-off in those stocks. We saw quite a big move to the downside in the S&P 500. Of course, the NASDAQ was pretty heavily hit. There was a positive session since, so some of those gains, those losses have been regained. But from where you're sitting, looking at the global equity picture, is that a concern? Is that something that you feel could be the beginning of markets starting to look at these shares and thinking, the valuations are pretty rich here, we've had a good run? And does that have a follow through, in your opinion, to the rest of the global equity market?
Yes. So, you know, as you pointed out, there's been this massive rally thanks to the Magnificent Seven across the past 2023. I mean, you know, it was the year of the Magnificent Seven. Average gains around 106% compared to the NASDAQ, which was around 54%. So, you know, really, really impressive moves. And a lot of that had been on the back of the AI hype and just general upbeat mood towards tech stocks, on the expectation that the Fed was also going to start cutting interest rates soon. But we have seen, I think, a real divergence appearing in these Magnificent Seven. You know, 2024 hasn't been that all-out strong rise that we've seen for these stocks across the previous year. And I mean, there seems to be, you know, stories in each of these particular stocks. For example, Tesla had a really poor start to 2024. You know, it's fallen quite considerably on massive increase in competition, particularly in China. We've seen deliveries China deliveries fall to their lowest level in a year. And that's, you know, fueled another round of price wars, which is going to keep those margins at Tesla under pressure. Apple as well. We've also got, you know, problems with their China market. They've seen sales drop 24% there. So again, you know, we've seen a real sell-off in Apple, down 12% so far this year. And also Alphabet, you know, again, down 6% this year. They've had some missteps in AI, which has really, you know, hurt the share price. But I think what we're seeing here, the major sort of overlying theme here, is those of the Magnificent Seven that are more deeply involved with developing AI have been outperforming those that haven't. So, you know, Tesla, Apple, Alphabet, they've really struggled to keep up with the stocks of such as Nvidia, Microsoft, Meta, who have had a pretty solid start again to 2024. Although, as you pointed out, there has been a little bit more weakness just in the past couple of sessions. I think that's, you know, understandable as well. Markets don't just go in one direction. We've had, you know, earnings come out for these stocks, you know, the likes of Nvidia, with, you know, other ones like AMD, the fundamentals that they're producing do support the strong rise in the share price. But as you point out, you know, we're getting to fairly lofty valuations. NASDAQ hit an all-time high. S&P was at an all-time high. You know, there is also this point where I think the market's just having a step back and just having a session of, you know, a bout of profit taking, which is completely standard practice. But I don't think that means that the AI rally is over at all. I think, you know, the fact that the fundamental and the results still support those forward guidances have been extremely strong, and that supports these valuations. So, you know, a little bit of up and down is completely standard within a market rally. I'm personally still fairly bullish on AI stocks. I do think that has the potential to broaden out further, though, into other markets. But I just think those tech stocks that aren't involved or aren't making a big noise about their involvement in AI, such as Apple, for example, they're the stocks that are starting to suffer now. So I think, you know, we saw that Apple shareholder meeting just at the end of last week. And there, you know, there was this real sense that Apple needs to up its game as far as its AI plans are concerned.
Yes, it's an interesting point that you make there, Fiona, that it's, you know, the companies like Google, Apple, for example, and Microsoft, you know, they're the ones that are developing the applications, and the share prices there have been strong, but there has been mixed results. But it's those companies that could be treated as the picks and shovels to some extent in this gold rush that are really benefiting. And it's something that we're seeing in the likes of Nvidia in terms of those numbers. They're astronomical. And as you mentioned, the forward guidance there is also very strong. So that's really supporting that rally. And throughout the small gyrations that we've seen this week, those chip stocks actually really did push on and weren't hit as heavily as some of those other tech stocks. So that's a particularly interesting observation. So looking next, Fiona, we're going to touch very quickly on oil, because, you know, at the beginning of this year and of course at the end of last year, it was a major market. There were lots of moves, but things have really quietened down. You know, we've settled around that $80 per barrel mark. You know, looking at what's on the horizon, are there any potential catalysts you feel that could get oil moving again, you know, maybe to the upside, maybe to the downside? Or do you think that we're in quite a happy equilibrium at the moment in terms of the supply? The threats of geopolitics have receded to some extent, and we're going to see a more benign environment? Or do you think this is the quiet before the storm to some extent with oil?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a really good point. The focus has been sort of very much elsewhere. Oil just seems to be sort of steadily just creeping that bit higher. You know, it has had a fairly calm but solid move higher, I would say, over the past couple of months. We've seen the focus much more on the likes of gold and Bitcoin, and so oil's really just gone under the radar. But as you said, it does seem to be sort of settling into this pattern. We know we've got OPEC Plus sort of supporting the price as they sort of extend those oil supply cuts, be them voluntary, into and across the second quarter. So that's just keeping the floor in place as far as oil is concerned. And then the other factors seem to have just sort of really calmed down. You know, as far as China's economic recovery is concerned, that's always been one of the factors that has been driving oil movements, particularly intraday level, as we see China sort of start to show signs, I would guess, of that economic recovery, however fragile it be, you know, extending. That's offering some support to oil prices as well. Obviously, we've got the China National People's Congress going on this week. And, you know, we've had those growth forecasts for China pretty much in line with expectation, but some concerns over how they're actually going to achieve those, given that there wasn't any massive announcement regarding stimulus. So I think that's going to be an area to watch, you know, continue keeping eyes on China. Are they able to continue this fragile economic recovery without a bazooka-sized stimulus? You know, we've got export and import data from China today, which was actually better than expected. So there are encouraging signs. And the other area to be watching is going to be interest rates. So I think just as far as demand concerns, or the demand outlook for oil is concerned, we're going to be watching interest rates. The prospect of an interest rate cut would be considered a positive for the oil demand outlook, particularly in the US, which is the largest consumer of oil. So, you know, if we do get closer, and we are getting there slowly but surely, to a cut by the Federal Reserve, then I think that would be something, again, that could be a catalyst for oil. But just at the moment, there seems to be sort of much more excitement in other areas of the market. So I think, you know, that we've just got to this stage where the factors that drive oil have sort of found this happy medium. Geopolitical tensions, they're going to continue to remain on the radar. But, you know, as we've sort of pointed out, that the actual sort of geopolitical tensions and the war that we have in Israel, between Israel and Hamas, isn't actually impacting oil supply. So, you know, with that in mind, we are just sort of not seeing that boost towards the $100 a barrel that perhaps, you know, was fretted over when the conflict actually kicked off. So yeah, you know, I think at the moment, and just looking out, I don't think there's going to be any, or I don't, in my crystal ball, I don't envisage any major shocks for the oil price, but I do see it sort of potentially just continuing a very, very slow grind higher.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Fiona. So you mentioned their interest rates and the potential impact that could have on oil. And that's the topic that we want to move on to now, because, you know, going into the beginning of this year, there was an expectation that March would be the month of the first cuts from the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve. But now we're here, that doesn't seem like that's going to be the scenario that plays out in markets. Now, given the shifts that we've seen in market expectations of when these major central banks are going to move in terms of cutting rates for the first time, now, from where you're sitting, Fiona, is there any timings of moves from particular central banks, you know, in terms of moving fast, in terms of moving first in cutting rates? And do you feel that that's going to present any trading opportunities going forward, given that there have been expectations built into the markets, they have been rolled back to some extent, and it's a bit of a wait and see scenario at the moment? If we see dramatically different times of the first rate cuts from these central banks. Do you think there's going to be any markets out there which see heightened volatility as a result of that?
Yes. You know, it's so interesting, isn't it, to have a look at how the market started 2024 and its pricing for interest rate cuts across the major central banks and to where we are now. You know, we've seen the markets had to really play down and rein in those rate cut expectations really quite considerably. You know, that I think that the market was extremely optimistic about the level of rate cuts that we would have been expected to see, or that it was expecting to see this year. I think, you know, we're recording this just ahead of the ECB interest rate decision for this month, in fact. And I think, you know, what's been interesting with the ECB is that although inflation has cooled now to 2.6%, so, you know, it is getting towards that 2% level, the ECB is still showing reluctance to talk about interest rate cuts. And we have seen that the economy there has been struggling. It's struggled, as far as we can see, that through the PMI data. Although there does seem to be a sort of a resurgence in the service sector, which is just the PMI for the services sector has just moved back over 50 in February. So there is some signs of encouragement. That, you know, the downturn there could have bottomed out. So I can see that the ECB are a little bit nervous. You know, none of the central banks want to move too soon, because they've all pointed out that the danger of moving too soon and then having a reacceleration in inflation is much more concerning than perhaps a slight bit of over tightening. So that's where they all stand. But I think with the ECB, given that inflation has cooled to that 2.6% level, it's surprising that they're not yet at the stage where they're prepared to even sort of, you know, start to really talk about it in a sensible way, given that they could be starting to cut rates in June. That's when the market's expecting them to cut rates. That's when I think they've sort of perhaps been considering when they're going to start to cut rates. So I think the June rate cut from the ECB, I believe, is probably going to be the first of the major central banks to cut rates. And I think that could have an impact, obviously, on the euro US dollar and sterling US euro sterling. Particularly given that the Federal Reserve, I think, is showing signs that they may not actually cut in June. So if we just sort of, in the euro US dollar trade, we've talked about the ECB, let's just concentrate for a moment on the Fed. The market is expecting the Fed to cut rates in June. The Fed has suggested-ish that it may start cutting rates around the June time. There seems to be some agreement. We had Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell last night saying that the central bank would cut rates in 2024, you know, gave some sort of confirmation that it was going to happen. But on the other hand, we're seeing US data is still resilient. You know, we're still seeing a relatively resilient jobs market. We're still seeing GDP growth. We're still seeing PMIs relatively strong. We did see a little bit of weakness come through more than expected in the manufacturing ISM. But generally speaking, the US economy is still holding up pretty well, which I think supports the view that maybe the Fed won't cut rates in June. And I think if that starts to look like the case, then we could see some more US dollar strength, particularly against the ECB, who I think are looking to be on track for a June rate cut. Interestingly, Neil Kashkari, the Minneapolis Fed president, also said yesterday that he doesn't see 3 rate cuts this year from the Federal Reserve, which is what the Fed had been alluding to. He sees 1, maybe 2. So that's, you know, suddenly we're seeing the Fed starting to play down even more how many, or the scale of the rate cuts that we could see this year. Just recently, the US dollar has been weakening. So it seems to be more focused on the fact that the Fed will be cutting rates. But I think if we do start to see non-farm payroll data come in tomorrow, you know, if we do see that stronger than expected, continued resilience in the US economy, inflation, particularly service sector inflation in the US, is still very sticky. If that remains the case, then there is the case that the Federal Reserve may need to push back further on rate cut expectations. And in that case, I think we could see the euro US dollar come under pressure, and also gold. I mean, gold is a really interesting one to watch at the moment. It's hit those all-time highs this week. It's, you know, really had a strong move higher, despite the fact that there are still those uncertainty over the timing of the Federal Reserve's interest rate cut. You know, so I think that's going to be another one to be watching.
Yes, certainly the gold price has been very interesting in 2024, because for many years it was relatively stagnant, but pushing through to those new highs, I'm sure, has grabbed the attention of some traders there. And going back to the point that you made, Fiona, about the timing of the Federal Reserve and how many they're going to be doing this year, there's conflicting messages coming out from different Federal Reserve members. So it's very difficult at the moment, I think, for markets to deduce any real sense of the scale of interest rates. And I think that's probably got something to do with why we're seeing markets hit record highs, because there isn't any confirmation one way or the other. There's going to be some rate hikes, but we don't know how many there's going to be. And, you know, that uncertainty to some extent on the timing of it does really play into people taking a bit of a step back from the interest rate narrative that was front and center for most of last year and the beginning of this year, and start to look at things such as the fundamentals that we were talking about in AI and other company earnings, which have been relatively good recently. So we were talking about the currencies there. We're talking about the euro and the pound and the dollar. But just want to move on now, Fiona, and look at cable, look at the pound against the dollar, because that's quite an interesting market. Looking at the chart here, we've been stuck in a relatively tight range going back to December. Top of the range is there or thereabouts where we are at the moment at 127. It goes up to about 128, going down to that level at just beneath 126. And that's something that's been consistent, as I said, going back to December. You know, a bit of a million-dollar question here, Fiona, but, you know, that tight range will break at some point. What do you think could be the catalyst to make that market break that range? And do you think it could be to the upside or the downside from here?
Yeah, so, I mean, pound's been pretty well supported, because I think in, you know, when we look at major central banks, the Bank of England is likely to be one of the later central banks to start cutting interest rates. So, you know, if we think about the UK economy, we've still got inflation at 4%. We've got service sector PMIs, which remain strong. So there is this idea that the recession that we tipped into at the end of last year is going to be short-lived and shallow, which then also sort of keeps the idea that perhaps it will be much harder to get inflation back down to that 2% level than initially expected. And so that sort of is helping to keep the pound supported against the US dollar, where we've seen sort of, you know, expectations of this June rate cut, and also against the euro, again, because the ECB is expected to move more quickly as far as rate cutting is concerned. Now, I think just technically looking at the chart, I think, you know, it is sort of a fairly bullish chart right now. Whilst we're just getting that recovery from the 200-day moving average, the pound has really pushed higher and it's heading towards that 128 level. I mean, I think if we can get a move over 128, then that would be really quite a bullish signal as far as the pricing is concerned for sterling US dollar. I think there are quite a few unknowns, as you alluded to and said, you know, with regards to uncertainty surrounding the rate cut from the Federal Reserve, the mixed messages, and that's making it quite hard for the US dollar to really sort of stand its ground. I think it's fallen to around a 1 month low against its major peers at the moment. So what the major catalyst that I'm going to be looking out for as far as sterling US dollar is concerned is, firstly, will UK inflation cooled to 2% in April, like the OBR suggested. What's really interesting with that comment is the timeline is actually very soon. So it's a very close time frame. So it's going to be very easy for us to know whether that was correct or wrong. That's going to be one thing. If we do see inflation cool sharply, then that could be, you know, a really negative impact, or have a very negative impact on sterling US dollar. Under that circumstance, then I think we could see the pound US dollar fall quite quickly back towards that support of the 200-day moving average, which is around that 125 level. So that would be the one thing I'd be looking for. Also, US non-farm payrolls tomorrow, very, very important. I think it's going to give us a really, again, a good insight into whether the US labour market is just holding up and showing that resilience. Because if we've still got continued sort of strength in that US labour market, then, you know, where's the Fed going to get the cues from that it's going to need to start cutting rates? Inflation's going to remain probably quite sticky. So that's going to be another one that I'm going to be watching. I think things do look, if we can get, as I said, a move over 128, then I'd be quite bullish on the pound. But I think there are a couple of hurdles that it would need to overcome first.
Fantastic. Thank you. So moving on now, Fiona, and this is a bit of a summary, because you have outlined a number of things to be looking forward to. But of course, we're coming towards the end of Q1. Q2's coming up. It could be a significant quarter for financial markets, given what we've seen happening recently. What would you say are the key events? It's probably bringing in some of the events and factors that you've mentioned already, but I think for listeners to this, if we'll be able to provide a real summary of a number of events they should be looking out for in Q2, in terms of, you know, the macro picture, you know, what's happening with the interest rates, and also which markets do you think are going to be in focus in Q2 as well?
Okay, so, you know, I think Q2, the big focus here is going to be on, as it has been for quite some time actually, is central banks. Okay, are they actually going to start cutting? If we are expecting those cuts, it's going to be at the end of Q2 from the ECB and the Fed. So the closer we get to that June date where we're expecting to see those cuts, obviously, I think there is the potential to have increased volatility surrounding the euro, US dollar, gold. Also, I mean, DAX, you know, DAX trading around its all-time highs on those expectations as well, that we're going to start to see monetary policy loosening. That's going to be a massive focus. Granted, that is towards the end of the second quarter. I feel like we're wishing the year away. but that is towards the end of the second quarter. But there'll be plenty of data, inflation data, jobs data, that we're going to be focusing on. So I think, you know, there's still going to be a lot to be focusing on. And the market is going to be very conscious that we're moving towards that deadline of when we're expecting the rate cuts to happen. So as we sort of see a reconciliation between market expectations, what central bankers are saying, and the data coming in, there is the potential for a fair amount of volatility in those markets. The other one to mention is, and we haven't talked about it so far, is Bitcoin. We've got the Bitcoin halving event in April, expected towards the end of April. Obviously, Bitcoin has been on an absolute ride over the past couple of weeks with this insatiable rally that took it to fresh all-time highs. But as we know, with Bitcoin, there can be a lot of volatility involved. You can have a big ride higher followed by quite a sharp fall lower. But that halving event basically means that the amount of supply of Bitcoin will be reduced by 50% for the miners. So we've still got that sort of, you know, big demand from ETFs, and we're going to have supply reduced further. So I think that's another asset class to be watching. If you're not necessarily Bitcoin, because you know it is a very volatile asset, then perhaps maybe even looking towards shares that have exposure to Bitcoin as well. That would be an interesting one to watch.
Fantastic. That's great. So Fiona, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.